Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. 8:06 on this Monday morning. It's June 8th. Currently 52 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. We've got 53 degrees in the Heber Valley. And on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, it's meteorologist Cedric Haynes. Good morning.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Pack. As we go throughout today, look for partly cloudy skies out there. More clouds this morning, a little more sunshine this afternoon. Temperatures will climb into the upper 70s up near Park City. Heber Valley, we're looking at temperatures into the low to mid 80s out there for us. Now, as we go into this afternoon, we're going to see those winds picking up out of the south and southwest, anywhere from 20 to 30 miles per hour, with some gusts up to 40 miles per hour. That's going to lead to that critical fire danger across the area. So use extreme caution if you're going to be recreating outside anytime throughout today. Again, all it takes is a chain dragging along some dry grass, or maybe a cigarette bud thrown out into some dry grass. Anything really to ignite any fires out there. So use extreme caution with these tinderbox-like conditions. And these conditions will stick around into our Tuesday as well. We'll see some slightly cooler air building in. Temperatures only in the upper 60s for highs in Park City on Tuesday. Highs only in the mid-70s in the Heber Valley. A weak front will be moving through, and that could produce an isolated strong storm or two. The main threat would be some gusty winds and some small hail with that. Again, I don't think it'll be widespread, but there could be a couple of isolated strong storms when that front moves through on Tuesday afternoon. So keep an eye to the sky for that. Otherwise, just look for those dry conditions and windy conditions to stick around. Heading into the middle of the week, we will remain a little cooler out there with those upper 60s for highs in Park City on Wednesday, mid to upper 70s in the Heber Valley with lots of sunshine. Thursday and Friday will feature lots of sunshine. Temperatures in the mid 70s in Park City on Thursday afternoon, highs nearing 80 by Friday afternoon. And the Heber Valley, we're going to go from temperatures in the low 80s for highs on Thursday afternoon with highs in the mid to upper 80s in the Heber Valley as we get towards your Friday with lots of sunshine. For the upcoming weekend, we're back to the heat. Temperatures climbing near 80 degrees in Park City for your Saturday and Sunday with lots of sunshine. And we'll see those temperatures into the low to mid 80s for Saturday and Sunday in the Heber Valley. That's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Pack. I'm ABC 4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Stay tuned. Coming up, I'll be checking in with Summit County Health Department Director Phil Bondurant. Later on, Deer Valley Ski and Bike School Programs Manager Doug Gormley and Rob Sogard, Vice President of Skier Services at Deer Valley, have details about the summer season. And Park City Education Foundation CEO Ingrid Whitley, Vice President of Advancement Jen Bello, and Bright Futures Counselor Pepper Elliott with an update on the programs offered by the foundation. Well, as Utah begins what's expected to be a hot, dry summer, teams at Deer Valley and Park City Mountain say they take a proactive approach to fire mitigation. KPCW's Grace Dorfler takes a closer look.
Utah is experiencing one of its driest years on record, which could make for an active wildfire season. In the Wasatch Back, ski resorts rely on a range of strategies, both to prevent fires and to stay ready in case a blaze ignites. Those strategies include conducting controlled burns, clearing dead trees, and coordinating with other agencies across the region. Steve Graff, Deer Valley's Vice President of Mountain Operations, says clearing away potential wildfire fuel is an important part of the resort's toolbox. Once ski season ends, snowcats switch from pushing piles of snow to moving dead trees off the mountain.
We will get a team of Sawyers on snowmobiles and, you know, a couple of different snowcats, and we'll go grab dead and dying, you know, generally larger trees that are on the steeper parts of the mountain, because it's much more efficient to travel over snow.
Deer Valley has been doing controlled burns for 5 years. Graff says trail crews will build dozens of piles of branches and brush all summer. Andy Van Houten is the senior ski patrol manager at Park City Mountain. He says fuel reduction is a cyclical process of building piles in the summer and burning them in cool weather.
Yeah, you kind of want to wait till you have a little bit of snow on the ground so the piles can't really connect the dots, if you will. The piles will burn just fine with a couple inches of snow on them once you ignite them, and then it helps reduce the risk of anything spreading.
Both resorts steward massive amounts of land. Park City Mountain covers over 7,000 acres, and Deer Valley includes nearly 5,000. Graff says Deer Valley's East Village expansion has prompted the resort to do a forest health assessment to figure out which areas of the mountain require the most care. At Park City Mountain, the areas where the resort borders town are especially important to protect, according to Van Houten.
you know, we have Thames Canyon that funnels right down into town. We've got the town area that funnels right into town. So those are other factors that we consider too.
A resort's infrastructure can work to its advantage during fire season too. At Deer Valley, Graf says snowmaking equipment blankets much of the mountain.
If you think about the snowmaking system on Deer Valley, there's thousands of hydrants all over the mountain, right? So it would almost be similar to a neighborhood if they had a fire hydrant in front of every house.
That means if a small fire sparks, mountain staff can get there quickly and try to knock it down. On-mountain cameras help monitor for problems too. Both resorts also have strict rules about hot work, anything that could cause a spark. Deer Valley sends workers out with fire extinguishers and water backpacks. Van Houten says a proactive approach is imperative to a safe fire season.
While it may not be super visible to anybody out riding their bike, rest assured we are doing a lot out here to try to prevent this from happening and have plans in place if it were to happen.
That includes working closely with state and local firefighting agencies. Statewide, officials are urging Utahns to be extra cautious this summer. The Bureau of Land Management announced Thursday it's implementing fire restrictions on public lands in a dozen counties, including Summit and Wasatch. Utah's Division of Forestry, Fire, and State Lands imposed Stage 1 fire restrictions within unincorporated Summit County Friday. More information about the rules is available at kpcw.org. Firework restrictions are in effect statewide. Deer Valley Resort is a financial supporter of KPCW. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
In the studio now with an update from the Summit County Health Department, I have Director Phil Bondurant. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, Leslie.
I haven't seen one yet, but we know they're coming because 'tis the season for mosquitoes. As we've been reporting, though, I mean, what does a hot, dry summer mean for the mosquito population? Because they like the standing water, and there's not a lot of standing water.
Yeah, absolutely right. But mosquitoes have been around since the dawn of time, unfortunately. They're one of the greatest survival experts that we know. And what it means is that the areas where there is water available, the mosquitoes will be more concentrated. What's interesting about mosquitoes is they'll find standing water anywhere. And that means that in our backyards, if we are watering our lawns or watering our gardens and we have containers that are inadvertently capturing water on a dry year like this, they will find that water and they'll go through their cycle of obtaining a blood meal, so that nasty little bite that we get, laying eggs, and then those eggs turning into larvae inside of that standing water, going into their pupate form and then becoming another pesky mosquito. The interesting thing also is that we know only female mosquitoes bite, not male mosquitoes. And so if you're seeing those adult male mosquitoes, which are the ones that kind of have the furry fuzzy antenna on top of their head, you know that you have a standing water or a breeding site close by. So dry years unfortunately may limit populations on a broader scale, but they're still going to be more concentrated in areas where those environments exist and they can thrive.
Yeah. And interestingly, I heard a segment on Weekend Edition yesterday that talked about how mosquitoes are the most lethal insect to humans. Malaria, West Nile virus, Zika, mm-hmm. yellow fever. I mean,
yeah, they're actually the most dangerous animal known to mankind. They kill more people per year than any other animal aside from humans ourselves. But yeah, you think about all those nasty diseases, those zoonotic diseases and tropical diseases that you've named, and you think about areas where mosquito control and abatement, like we're lucky to have here in Summit County, does not exist in other areas of the world. Some of those diseases could be a death sentence. Malaria is even for individuals that get it in areas where there is supportive and care available, it's still a miserable experience. And so, yeah, mosquitoes are a nasty critter that exists. And I know that there's an important part of the ecosystem for bats and birds, but they're also a menace to mankind and create a lot of unfortunate situations with diseases.
Okay, so for residents, what they need to know is check for standing water and get rid of it, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Remove standing water where possible. Dawn and dusk are the prime biting times, and the unique thing about those diseases that you mentioned here locally, West Nile virus, is that it's 100% preventable. If you don't get bit, you'll never get a mosquito-borne disease. So long sleeve clothing during those prime biting times, and if you're not wanting to wear the long sleeve clothes because it's hot, there are some natural remedies that help prevent mosquito bites, and then you, if you're comfortable with it, you can use DEET and other artificial insect repellents to keep yourself safe, you and your loved ones.
Yeah. Do we know, is it a blood type or sweet blood? I mean, what is it? Because I get bit, my husband doesn't.
Yeah, you know, that's the age-old question is, what is it? I am on the same boat as you for whatever reason. If you're with me, you'll never be bit by a mosquito. But there's something that they do like. There's a number of different theories. There's blood types and genetic codes and all those things that appear to be attractive. But we do know they find their host by CO2. That's their main focus point on how they get into those warm-blooded animals. And apparently my CO2 is really good because I don't know what it is about it. But yeah, I tend to find a lot of mosquito bites during the summertime as well.
Mm. All right. June is, I guess, Men's Health Month. Tell us what services the health department can provide for men specifically.
Yeah, there's a number of different campaigns going on locally in the state as well as nationally. But really, this is a month that kind of flies under the radar, per se. And what I mean by that is Summit County, we're very fortunate that we talk about mental and behavioral health on a regular basis. Earlier this year, we conducted a survey to get a sense of what's going on. But I want to give just a few stats to bring this to light of how severe this is among the male population. So from ages 10 to 44, suicide is the second leading cause of death, only behind unintentional injury. It's the eighth leading cause of death nationally across all ages of men. When we look at this in Utah, we are two times the national average in suicides. And when you look at men, three of the four suicides in the state of Utah are men, with a rate of roughly 31 out of 100,000 deaths being men, which is disproportionate to females, which is 8.7 deaths per 100,000. So nearly three times the rate in suicide in men versus women. We know that from that survey that was conducted earlier this year, that men are feeling isolated, they're experiencing depression, and they're unsure about the future. And it's important that we remember that connection, conversation, you know, help and support, just like our physical health. When we're not feeling well or we break a bone, we go to the doctor and they do what they do to help us get better and help our bodies mend. Our mental health is the same way. We need to take care of it. And men tend to be a little more prideful, a little less willing to accept mental health services or admit that they might need some help. And we want to make sure that there's an awareness to this, that those men in our lives that could be silently struggling, they know that we care about them, that there are services available.
Yeah. Is that changing at all? Because I think that's really a kind of a cultural thing. You know, we've always told men, suck it up, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, don't be a crybaby, right?
Yeah. I think that it is changing quite a bit. We've always been told men don't cry, men don't have emotions, those types of things. And if you do, growing up, you tend to get poked fun at in those types of things. And then that transfers over to adulthood. And Summit County has spent a lot of time, a lot of resources trying to break that stigma, making things available, easily available. We have a number of different apps and phone numbers that you can call, services that are made available for people regardless of your insurance situation, your financial situation. It really is about ease of access, and I do think that stigma is being reduced, although I don't think it's at a point where we want. If we're seeing numbers like this where nearly 31 out of 100,000 deaths, a rate of that for suicide is really concerning to me.
Hmm. So what services does the county provide that men, you know, if they're willing to take advantage of?
Yeah, there's a number of providers in town for those that are insured. If you're uninsured, you can call over to the health department, 435-333-1500, and you can speak with our behavioral health team and they can get individuals lined up. But Leslie, I think the most important message that I can share on this topic today is that if someone is, it doesn't matter, male, female, doesn't matter your age, doesn't matter where you come from, where you call home, If you are experiencing a mental health crisis, please, please, please call 988. You don't have to fight this battle alone. If you can't remember that number, call 911. Our local law enforcement officials have training on how to deal with mental health crises. They know how to get in touch with the mobile crisis outreach, the mobile crisis outreach team for mental health crises. If you're in that space where the world looks dark and it's heavy and you don't know where to go, 988. If you're a parent and you want tools at your fingertips, please download the Safe UT app. It's free, and it is a life-saving app at your fingertips. So lots of resources that are passive in terms of having access to them, and lots of resources that are reactive in the event that someone's experiencing a mental health crisis.
Okay. Well, it is also the season for long days of sunshine. Maybe not today, but you can still get sunburned even with the clouds. And what's interesting about Utah, I think we have like the highest melanoma rate in the country.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I can't think of a more beautiful place to spend your summer than on the Wasatch Back. We're extremely fortunate here with the different bodies of water to be out in and riding our bikes and hiking. But you are exactly right that we are two times the national average as a state for melanoma occurrences. Summit County is three times the rate of melanoma cancers compared to the national average. Speaking to our fellows out there, age 65 plus, 230 cases per 100,000 people, or 10 times the national average for melanoma. It's real, it's here. Early detection is key. But it is something that we know that UV is one of the leading causes of melanoma as it transitions the DNA in our skin cells and they begin to grow abnormally and we start to see cases of melanoma cancer pop up.
Yeah, so I mean, is cancer, I mean, I guess skin cancer is kind of the big, melanoma is just one of the different types of skin cancer?
Yeah, I'm not a cancer expert and I don't claim to be, but I do know that when we look at this, it's abnormal cell growth in the skin triggered by UV exposure. And I know that sometimes it's visible and our dermatologists in the area are really good at picking it out. And then sometimes it's less visible. And so it goes back to sun safety exposure, wearing those long sleeve clothes, wearing sunscreen, doing what you can to limit that UV exposure, staying out of tanning beds and making sure that your skin stays healthy. You know, if you're fair-skinned, you have a history of melanoma in your family, you're more likely that the rate of occurrence goes up quite a bit. But we always encourage visiting a dermatologist on a regular basis, annually if possible. And if you don't have insurance and that is not available to you, the health department does bring up a mobile dermatology bus in the spring and in the fall so that individuals can make an appointment. And that has been wildly successful, that each time we provide that service free of charge, these professionals that are doing these exams have found melanomas in people. They've removed them on site, they've sent them in for testing, and while it's hard to say what the future might have been had that not been found, we do know that their future is much brighter having had that melanoma removed and identified.
Okay, call today. It's a 6-month wait, at least it was for me.
Yeah,
to get in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Tell me about plans for home visitation expansion.
Yeah, we're really excited about this. The team back late 2025 applied for a grant and were awarded that grant earlier this year for $200,000, which allows us to expand our home visitation program and to build out a program that we've titled Strong Starts. And this is for children up to 8 years old that are insured or underinsured, not insured, it doesn't matter. But we receive referrals from physicians, ecclesiastical leaders, members in the community of families that might need a little bit of guidance as they get their young family started. And what happens is a call referral comes in, we send out a professional nurse, a staff member, an interpreter if needed, to go out and visit with these families. And what they do is medical screenings, the ASQ or ages, stages screening questionnaire, and other mental health, and we're integrating preliminary mental health screenings into these as well. They take that information, work their magic with it, bring it back to a team of professionals here at the county, at the Summit County Health Department, and then they build out a plan, a referral plan. Some of those services may be available inside of the health department. Some might not be, and they might be partners outside of the agency. But the intent is we want to give these kids a strong start. And if we can identify assistance programs like WIC or behavioral health or even individual programs like our early intervention program, immunizations, it doesn't matter. The idea is that a lot of families, as they start with their new little ones, take on a lot of responsibility, as we know. And sometimes they're not sure what's available to them and what they can use that the county provides. And so this team goes into the home in a very comfortable setting. The ladies that run this program are absolutely amazing. The paraprofessionals at the department, men and women, absolutely amazing in what they do. It's a project based on the passion we have for making this community as healthy as possible and meeting them on their level, communicating on their level so that they can get access to those resources.
Okay, let's talk quickly about the move to the Peak Center. Have you guys decided what portions of the health department are moving from Quinns Junction offices to the Peak Center?
We have a very high-level preliminary plan that we have presented to Shane Scott, our county manager, on who would move to the second floor of the Peak Center. I do believe sometime in mid-July, that plan for the second floor, which is not a public-facing floor, is to be finalized and presented to staff. So at the request of Shane and the request of the council, the health department's work to identify roughly 18 to 20 staff members that would move from the Quinns building to the Peak Center. And those are those have been, I guess, categorized as individuals that are not forward-facing public interactions. And what I mean by that is they still do good work in the community, they still engage in the community, but the public is not coming into their workspace to receive services like they might for a food permit or for immunizations or other testing and those types of clinical things we do. WIC is also included. We have individuals come in to go through their WIC certification process. So those services that are forward-facing would remain at the Quinns building. We're calling that our clinical and forward-facing services. And then everybody else, administration, business management, health promotion, sustainability, our behavioral health services, substance use would all move to Peak on that second floor where they have the opportunity to network and interact with other agencies inside the county.
So it sounds like you're going to be moving.
It appears that way as of right now with this preliminary plan.
Okay, so at this point, we don't know how much space is going to be opened at Quinns?
We have an idea, and there is a lot of interest inside of our community and what that looks like. As we know, space here is very limited across the community, and there's a lot of nonprofits that are interested in that. The county does have some obligations, both statutorily as well as contractually, to other organizations that are housed in other areas of the county that we've considered moving in there. But right now, we still have time to take all of the information that's being presented to us, the interest that comes from other nonprofit groups. And in the end, I'm confident that conversations between the health department, the county council, the county manager, we can determine the best use of all county facilities with the focus of serving all of Summit County, which we need to, you know, include North and South Summit in that conversation, Park City, the Basin, really just understanding the spaces is a finite resource. What do we want to do with it? How can we best serve the community and make sure that all residents of Summit County are represented in that use?
Okay, so we'll know more when we talk to you next month.
That's the plan, yeah.
Okay, Phil, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Phil Bondurant is the director of the Summit County Health Department. Well, summer is officially underway at Deer Valley Resort, and in the studio to tell us more, I have Ski and Bike School Programs Manager Doug Gormley, along with Vice President of Skier Services, Rob Sogar. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
So, Rob, can you start and just describe this summer compared to the past couple of years, especially for all the expansion activity that was taking place around the resort?
Yeah, that shut us down a little bit. We are super excited to be back and have the bike park fully operational, ready to go. Last year, we were about half the park. The upper mountain was closed. So this year, we are back, and our goal is to make this big and get everybody back out there.
Okay, so what are some of the biggest changes or improvements besides having the other part of the park open?
I'll let Doug take that a little bit, but just getting those trails with the pinion lift, it took out all the trails off the meadow and the top. So this is rebuilding. All those are brand new. So Doug, maybe you have a comment on that.
Yeah, to answer your question, I think some of the things we're doing to get people back is we've extended hours. So every day we're open. We're open till 6 o'clock instead of 5 o'clock. So from 10 to 6, we've brought back our twilight evening on Wednesdays. So we'll be open until 8 o'clock. We're going to do a little teaser weekend this weekend, the 13th and 14th. Season's pass holders will be able to come and ride the bike park early. We'll be open starting the 19th for the rest of the season till September 20th. Some of the things that I think are exciting is we really want people to come and ride a lot. Where seasons passes have radically changed. So we're going to be offering our seasons pass for Deer Valley for $329. So that's a reduction in price. We've also got the Wasatch Gravity Pass. So you can actually ride Solitude and Deer Valley for the full season for $399. So really, really affordable passes. The thing about those passes also is they get you a lot of deals and discounts around the resort. So 15% off of food and beverage, mountain bike lessons and coaching, all the F&B around the resort. So retail. So a lot of good benefits and perks with that season's pass.
Yeah. And what about those who have purchased next year's season's pass? I mean, do they get privileges on the lifts?
Yeah, Rob, do you want to touch on that one?
Yeah, anyone with a current season pass has access. Also for our Icon pass holders, if you have a full Icon, you can get 25% off, so that $329 turns into $246, if my math is correct.
Okay. You're talking about some of those trails. What about Bowhunter? Did that come back at the top?
That is a great question. I do believe Bowhunter is probably, to be honest, is probably gone. Just because of that construction, the way that Bowhunter trail wrapped around, I imagine that is probably gone.
Yeah. All right. So what are the activities, I guess, continue to be the biggest draw for summer at Deer Valley? I know you got a pretty robust children's camp, but is it mountain biking?
Yeah, the mountain biking is incredible, but obviously, I mean, we've got the summer concert series going on. We've got a huge amount of F&B offerings. We've got live music going on. So there is just a lot of energy around the resort. But the mountain biking's a huge one that I think, again, we're excited that it's kind of fully back. Last season just felt kind of quiet. Our upper mountain is really the bulk of the bike park riding. And so to have that back full force is exciting for the summer.
Yeah, I mean, the lift serve mountain biking really, I think, takes a toll on some of the trails that you guys, because it's all downhill. What kind of work is involved in kind of trying to keep those rideable?
Yes, absolutely. We've got a trail crew that puts in, and it is Deer Valley. So a lot of the area trails have partnerships with Mountain Trails Foundation, a lot of different kind of trail builders, and everything is done in the bike park within Deer Valley's trail crew. They put in an enormous amount of effort. Each one of our flow trails are hundreds of thousands of dollars to build the initial build, and then it's not like we build it and then it's done. It takes continual just work and effort to make sure that's riding well, the braking bumps, the holes, and so a huge amount of money is put into maintaining those trails.
Yeah. Have you guys instituted any of those mats like we've seen up like on Spiro, you know, that kind of helps with some of the erosion?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I know that our bike crew, one of the things our bike crew has done is actually traveled quite a bit to a lot of different places. To check out what they're doing with trail erosion. And so I have not seen usage of those yet, but it'll be interesting. I know that they're up there right now. They were actually up on the mountain yesterday on Sunday working. So it'll be interesting to see if they implement some of those.
Okay. And it sounds like clinics and instructional programs returning in full this year. Talk to us a little bit about what offerings are available for riders of different skill levels.
Yeah, so we offer everything from private lessons, those are half day or full day lessons, morning and afternoon. And then group lessons are kind of the same thing. We offer group lessons for kids and adults. We separate them out and kind of based on ages, developmental needs, that sort of thing. We offer those in the morning and in the afternoon. Really small ratios of numbers. So great ways, very affordable, the group lessons as well. And so some of the other things that we're doing this season that we're really excited about is we're introducing a women's ride series. So we've had some women's clinics in the past, but what we're going to do this year is that we're offering 3 dates. And it's really kind of about, you know, riding with friends and making some skill improvements, but a really fun day. And so we've got 3 dates that are being offered, 2 in July, 1 in August. If you attend all of those dates, it is insanely affordable because if you sign up for all 3, you actually get a season's pass included with the purchase of that. And so the day is kind of set up where there's morning, you're going to be working with some coaches for the until the afternoon. You'll get lunch included, so you'll have a lunch break. And then the rest of the afternoon is just riding with your friends. And then there's an après at the end of the day, so really fun. And then our kids' gravity camp is back. We're doing 3 dates, 2 in July, 1 in August, and that one's going to be an all day, including lunch. And that's a way to get your kids riding with coaches safely, learning the bike park and all skill levels and continuing. And that one is super affordable. That is literally the cost of the season's pass. It is $300 if you sign up for all 3 dates. And again, you kind of get this experience as well as walking away with the season's pass.
Okay. So where do you do the clinics? Because nobody, especially if they're a beginner, wants to be in the way of somebody headed downhill.
Yeah, so the bike coaches are really good about kind of assessing skills, and so we do have we're going to make sure, you know, that you're on the right trails, and that we're working on skills in safe places. So we've got some things like our skills park where we'll work with students before they're ready. We want to once we move them to the trail, they're able to ride that trail. And if there are sections we want to work on, there are some trails that are kind of a little quieter that we make sure. So we have some skills development areas, but then also just making sure, you know, we're paying attention to kind of traffic flows.
Yeah, can you talk a little bit about how mountain biking instruction has kind of evolved over the last few years?
Yeah, it's interesting. I've been in the game for quite some time, and it's wild. Back in the day, it was a lot of talking people into lessons. Nowadays, I think people realize mountain biking, it's not just like riding a bicycle, that it really requires fundamentals. And so it's great. I see coaches kind of all over the place. There's a lot of different, you know, places that you can go and take a lesson. We've been doing this for 30 plus years, so we've got a lot of very kind of experienced coaches. And then I think the thing that's really great about doing us taking a lesson at Deer Valley is the lift, the repetition, the mileage that you're getting. So if you are a cross country rider that maybe doesn't see yourself as a downhill rider, the opportunity to just get mileage and repetition. So when you go on that cross country ride, now you're feeling very safe riding the downhill part. I think a lot of people enjoy the up and then feel a little scared on the down.
Okay. Hey, I want you to mention, and we'll certainly have you back to talk more about this, but Deer Valley is hosting the Fox US Open of mountain biking. This sounds like a big deal.
Absolutely, it's a huge one. The Old Norbin Nationals were a lot of history with Deer Valley and mountain bike racing, so it's amazing to have a huge event back. So this is the U.S. Open, as well as then the final stop on the U.S. National Mountain Bike Series. So it's going to bring riders from all over the United States, all over the world potentially, just because of the timing of the race. So it's going to be a huge event. It's going to be everything from pro riders down to youth riders. So we're excited.
Okay, that's September 11th through the 13th.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, and so would it just be on one downhill trail, or is it a whole mountain course?
There's going to be, and I wish I had that information exact. So the NCS track was our original downhill, and I believe that we're modifying that. That's a pretty pro level course. So my assumption would be is that we'll also for the youth have an easier downhill.
Okay, let's see, Doug. Rob, I guess I wanted to direct this to. Summer operations, of course, require a pretty large workforce. Have you got them all filled, or are you looking to fill some of them?
We do. I think we're all set. highlighted by, you mentioned our kids' camps and that starting. We have record numbers of counselors this year and record numbers of kids. So we're really excited that that program's taking off. We have our stand-up paddleboard operation that is hiring, and we'll be going out of the ponds at the plaza. We have all the food and beverage this year. We're doing weekly. We'll have the lawn at Silver Lake with food, drinks, trailer, music. We have our Fire and Flavor Festival. So all the departments are in that, and hiring's been well. People want to be at Deer Valley, and full speed this summer is going to be great.
Okay, so the live music and the food at Silver Lake, that happens, is it daily?
It's weekends, Friday, okay. Saturday, and Sunday with all of it. Every day is beautiful up there with the new lawn and the place to hang out. And then also this year new, we are going to have a coffee shop open at Snow Park, which it's been a long time since you got to Snow Park, and you didn't either have to go back to the plaza or up to Silver Lake. We'll have a coffee shop open from, I believe, 8 to 11, and then that'll move outside, so there'll be a place to get food and beer and that at Snow Park this year.
Okay. Anything else you guys wanted to mention?
Yeah, I'd love to actually talk. You had mentioned actually the, you know, kind of the amount of trail work that's being done up there. Deer Valley is a really unique bike park. We sit in a massive network of trails. And so entry into the bike park is quite easy if you're pedaling. So one of the things that we are trying this year, we don't want to lock our doors to allow access to the bike park, but for a lot of safety reasons, and then also just to help support the amount of work that gets put into the bike park, we do have a pedal pass this year. So when you come into certain areas of the bike park to access downhill only trails, you'll actually go through some fencing, and it's asking for some help with, again, just these trails that people love to ride. So we're offering a pedal pass this year. So for $50 for the entire season, you have access to the bike park during hours of operation. And it just helps to kind of, you know, with that trail maintenance. And then again, just assigning a release of liability so you understand kind of bike park etiquette and rules. You can also buy a day pass for $12. E-bikes are welcome at Deer Valley in the bike park in those trails. We have a designated trail from Snow Park up to Mid Mountain, but then these pedal kind of access points will allow you as well. And so, and that includes a route all the way to the top of Bald Mountain, which is unique. We've typically, if you were pedaling into the bike park up on the upper mountain, you came in through the meadow. Now you can access the top of the bike park with the bike park pedal pass. So,
okay, so like all of that Flagstaff Loop area, that's considered part of the park?
That's actually outside of the bike park. And So that's all kind of user, you know, and those with e-bikes are kind of off limits. So this is within the bike park. We'll have a trail map and designated kind of routes into the park. So it is very, you know, a lot of people ride the bus, come in, they pedal in to certain areas of the bike park. So it is really to access the bike park trails. And again, those are the ones that cost an enormous amount of money to build and maintain.
Yeah, those flow trails is what you're basically talking about.
Yep.
Okay. Anything else?
No, I think we're good.
Yeah. Thank
you. Okay. All right. Doug Gormley, Rob Sogard, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
In the studio now with an update from Park City Education Foundation, I have CEO Ingrid Whitley, Vice President of Advancement Jen Bellow, and Park City High School Bright Futures Counselor Pepper Elliott. Good morning to all ladies.
Good morning.
Pepper, let's start with you. This was the first year of the expanded Bright Futures program at Park City High. How did it go?
It was wonderful. We had an amazing year. I loved every minute of it, meeting with our first-gen students, making plans with all of our seniors for life after high school, and, you know, talking with the younger students about their future plans, the importance of, you know, doing well in school, all of that. It was just a really fantastic year. We got to take a bunch of field trips, visiting college campuses, which were incredibly informative and actually helped students make up their mind about schools that they were going to attend next fall. So it was really great.
I'm guessing you're talking Utah schools.
I'm talking Utah schools, yeah. Yes. We do have students.
Let's go to Harvard. Yeah.
Yes, well, and we do actually have a first-gen student going to Harvard next fall, which is awesome. So we have students, a lot of students staying in state. We have amazing institutions here, so we're incredibly excited and happy about that. We also have students going all over the country, some international, a couple Ivy Leagues. It's really, they're an impressive group.
Yeah. Well, tell us, share some of the outcomes that you saw this year.
Yeah, I ended up with about 72 seniors that I was working with through the year.
And these are first gen?
These are first gen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, first gen students and just a variety of students who went planning on all kinds of different careers in the future. So that was really fantastic. We ended up with 28 students earning and winning Bright Future scholarships, which is incredible, that will follow them through college, and they'll be working closely with Valeria. So yeah, it was just really fantastic. And the student body, the number of students grew as I was working with them through the year, because some students weren't aware that they were automatically could be part of the program. So that was incredible as well, being able to work with 9, 10, 11 prepping for their future at the high school.
Yeah. So what are you seeing, those numbers? Are they growing in terms of the total number of first gen coming through the program, or?
Yes, the number's definitely growing. So we had quite a few more students, you know, this year than we ever have in the past, having opened it up that way. But, you know, starting out, our freshmen, I had a much smaller number start at the beginning of the year. We were in the 30s, and now we're up to the 60s. So, yeah, as students learn about it from their friends, from each other, as they hear us coming into classrooms, talking about what we do, they would message me, let me know, hey, I'm not on your list. I need to be on your list, which is exciting and fun. So then I get to meet with them. We put them on the list, and they're part of the program. So it has grown. It did grow a lot during the year, and then next year it will grow even more. We have quite a few coming in from Ecker, which I'm excited about.
Okay,
to meet our new freshmen. Mm-hmm.
Do they self-identify then? Is that?
Yeah, students can self-identify. They also, when they fill out, when parents work with them on filling out their registration for the new year, there's a little box where you can select that you're a first gen, like we would be a first gen college going student in the future. So that's how we identify.
Mm-hmm. And are you going to get some help?
What do you mean?
As you start to see those numbers grow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's really fantastic the way the program's set up, that I'm part of the counseling team at the high school, because all of these first-gen students also have their academic counselor. So they've got double counselor work going on. So we work really closely as a team. When we have a student that's struggling, we can work with them together if they need extra time with me to help them, you know, finish up a class at the end of the year for graduation, or, you know, planning out their schedule, whatever it is they're dealing with in life, I can do some extra help for them. But they still have their academic counselor. So with us all working together, it works out great to support them.
Okay. Ingrid, since we last spoke, Running with Ed has come and gone. How did it go?
Yeah, it was amazing. It's always such a fun day. Jen and our team do a fabulous job. We have incredible volunteers. We raised a little over $270,000 this year and had about
800 runners.
800 runners. And the weather was great, held out, and we raised a lot of money for our schools, which is the most important thing.
Yeah, how does that compare with other years, Jen?
Yeah, so it's a little less than last year. We had unfortunately a drop. We scholarship our free and reduced students, and due to some things that had happened in the community right before Running With Ed, we had a lot of those students missing from the race. So, but as far as, and that's a bummer, right? Because we love having those students, and it's being part of the community for those families. But as far as all, you know, regular runners, things like that, we actually had more paid runners than we normally do, which is great because we do scholarship all the teachers as well. We had about 180 Park City School District teachers running, and so we were really happy with the 800 number.
So what happened with the free and reduced kids?
Well, I think we had some immigration enforcement come in right before, and so that was scary.
Okay, so they stayed away.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right, so what does this mean? I mean, this funding now, Ingrid, for the foundation's programs.
Sure. So for next school year, we have budgeted for about $1.4 million in grants to the school district, which is so exciting. We support four different focus areas in our schools. So personalized learning, real world learning, elevating educators, and closing the opportunity gap. And we do that through four different grants. We have a new grant, an innovation grant, which is really exciting. We've allocated some money for an LCSW, a licensed clinical social worker position at the elementary schools. So they've historically had two, and they've shared amongst the four. Next year, every elementary school will have its own LCSW, which is actually really unique in the state of Utah, which is, you know, exciting for our district and for our students and the support that they can get. But we also have allocated an additional $125,000 in our budget, which is not yet, we don't know where it's going to go. And that's part of the innovation grant. So we want to make sure we have some money, you know, ready to go to be distributed to the district as things come up, as new programs maybe emerge, as the district tells us, hey, we would really like to try this. And so we're excited to work with our school district partner to figure out where that's going to go next year.
Okay, so it was last year, I think, that you decided to switch from the 7 initiatives to the 4 pillars?
Exactly. So that's part of our 2030 strategic plan. And really, most of the things that we've been supporting fall into those 4 focus areas that I mentioned. We're, you know, continuing to support preschool and after school through sustaining grants. Those are, you know, longer standing programs that we're going to continue to support because it's integral to our school district and the programs that our students have come to rely on. But we also wanted to kind of, you know, create some other structures so we could start funding things that might be new or different. Last year we funded the Yonder pouches. That was kind of money we had to raise really quickly. And so we realized through kind of those experiences that we needed to have some money set aside for kind of urgent bigger needs that we weren't expecting or the district wasn't expecting. We're going to continue our Express Grant program. This year we gave about $40,000 out to classroom teachers who needed quick money, right, for a program they wanted to try in their class or a trip they wanted to take. And those grants are up to $2,000 per teacher. And then, of course, our classroom grant program will continue to support. We have some exciting ones for next year as well.
Yeah, tell us a little about some of the classroom grant.
Yeah,
because I think they have to apply, right?
They do.
And
yes.
It's kind of juried. Really,
yeah, right? We have a great committee. And the committee is all educators and students, which is super fun. And actually, the students give us incredible feedback on the applications they read and how they've experienced kind of, you know, what the teachers are asking for. We're doing some new things next year. So telehealth, that was really interesting. The ability to test students right on site at the nurse's office so they can get diagnosed if they have COVID or the flu or, you know, what have you, without having to go to the doctor. And for a lot of our students, that's a barrier, having to go to the doctor, paying that copay. So doing it right on site at schools is something that they'll be trying next year. We have a lot of music programs, new instruments for our elementary schools, composer in residence again at the high school, which is a really cool program. Composer makes a unique piece of music, the students learn it, and then they perform it. And so that's a great opportunity for our high school students. Garden club at Ecker, which is precious. I got to see it last year, and it's a really sweet group of kids who grow herbs and plants in a classroom in a hydroponic little structure. And some library accessibility at McPolin so kiddos can see books and get really excited and energized and want to read them. So those are just a few of the things that we're funding next year, but that's a program or a grant that won't, you know, ever go away. We love our classroom grant program.
Okay, and then Running with Ed funds all of these grants or just the classroom grants?
Running with Ed funds all of our grants. So, you know, we want to make sure that we're able to fund everything we talked about, our after school, our positive behavior intervention systems that we support, our obviously Bright Futures program. And so we definitely rely on all of our fundraisers to fund all of our grants that we give to the district.
Okay, and Jen, I'm going to turn to you. This is your final Park City Education Foundation update.
Yes, it is. It is, and I'm retiring on June 30th. I thought we'd celebrate.
She brought in her Martinellis.
I thought, well, you know what? We need to have a little bubbly. It can be
non-alcoholic
bubbly. But yes, I've been doing this for 15 years. Leslie, you've been doing it a lot longer than me, of course. But we have to celebrate because coming on here, you guys supporting us and the community is really important for us to get the message out. So I'm passing along the bubbly.
Do not get me in trouble and be very careful with those glasses because we are around very expensive equipment.
We're around very expensive equipment. I have been here when there's been celebrations even bigger than this one. So
put it out there.
There you go. Passing that to you. But
what's next for you?
So I will probably sleep. I'm going to do a lot of traveling. I'm going to see my kids, my folks. This has been the privilege of a lifetime to work for the Ed Foundation, and I'm going to get all verklempt. I said I wouldn't cry on the radio, but it just has been an incredible opportunity and privilege. I'm very grateful to the community for all the support. And next year, the Ed Foundation will be celebrating our 40th anniversary. So I want to toast, yes, to my retirement, but also to 40 years of PCEF.
Okay.
Thank you.
We will miss you, Jen. Congratulations to you, Jen, and I appreciate the great work that you've done for the foundation and also for KPCW. So who's going to replace you?
We have a great team in place. Carrie Bedell has been on our team for about a year and a half. She's going to move into the managing director of advancement role. Laura Wallace is new on our team. She's going to be spearheading the Red Apple Gala and running with Ed and all of our fundraising events. So we've got a great team in place, and we'll very much miss Jen. But we know that you've really earned this retirement. You've worked so hard. We're really excited for her.
Okay, well, here's to sleep.
And yes. Cheers to sleep.
Yes. All right, cheers. Here. Thanks,
Thank you,
everybody.
Jen.